Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Well, Backchat Basketball Show, hanging out, not with Ben Mallers, not with Greg Heyer, but we've been very lucky, not as lucky as the San Antonio Spurs. We've got Liam Santamaria with us today. Liam, how you going?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
That's very good. So the San Antonio Spurs, they've bloody done it again. Robinson into Duncan into Wembanyama. It doesn't make sense, but the basketball gods have shined upon the San Antonio Spurs. How do you feel after seeing the Spurs get the number one pick again?
I love it. I got to be honest. I love it. I was looking at that final four and thinking about who I would like to get that number one spot and to get Wemby and build with him. I really like the idea of Portland. I like the idea of him teaming up with LaMelo, of course, in Charlotte. But I don't know. There's something about Wemby that just feels like he fits the Spurs. Maybe it's because he's an international. Maybe because he's a number one draft pick that's a big guy like the Admiral and Big Fundy. And then I just like, you know, the fact that in the twilight years of Greg Popovich's NBA head coaching career, he's going to be able to work with Wemby and get his career underway.
Yeah, he's going to get, for the last three or four seasons, people are saying, oh, this is Pop's final year, and seemingly keeps getting dragged in. And now I saw a tweet, someone saying, oh, Popovich is going to be coaching as like a brain in a jar in like 15 years with Wemby. So I don't know. I wonder what that means for him, if he's like, well, you know, buckle in for another 10, 15, or he could, I don't know. Why would you leave now? You got such a good opportunity with this.
Yeah. It's been interesting to watch that over the last few years and to think like after the teams that he was working with, you know, why is he still doing it with these groups and these young players? And then, yeah, he's going to have Wembanyama in there. And I just feel like also just the stability of that organization. And it does feel like one of the more sort of international NBA franchises as well. You know, of course, with Ginobili and Tony Parker and Boris Diaw and these kind of guys over the years. And you've still got Pop and you've still got RC Buford there at the helm running the organization. It feels like the really stable, really comfortable, solid franchise for him to land at.
Exactly. And he was pumped as well. There's some video of him seeing it. And look, you know, I don't want to shit on any teams out there, but the Hornets have continually been mediocre at best. And the Pistons, like, you'd be hoping not to get to those teams. So he'd be absolutely stoked to end up with the Spurs, where they basically tank for a year. I mean, they haven't been good for a while, but they basically tank for 1 year and then they're good again. It's very frustrating. As a Mavs fan who's just, I don't know what we're doing at the moment, we ended up with the 10th pick, which is not an absolute nothing burger. Just to see a team like the Spurs, like, let's just be really shit for a year, get a generational talent and then move on, is quite frustrating. Liam, we have sort of moved on pretty quickly, but I usually ask our guests one question at the start of every episode of the Backchat Basketball Show, which you can find us on Instagram, Backchat_basketball. Liam, you've played basketball. You've been a pro basketballer in your career. Now you're doing great things in the media. But what's your greatest sporting achievement not in the basketball realm? I'll tell you mine. I'll give you some time. I'll pad for you. So I was an elite cricketer when I played for Chute Hill Cricket Club. And you're not from Perth, but Chute Hill's elite club. You know, it's big time. Mm-hmm. 5 for 16 in a grand final, bowling leggies, cleaned up the tail end. We still lost the grand final, which is unfortunate. But that's probably the greatest thing I've ever done in the sporting realm. What about you? And you can't use basketball because you've been a pro. It's only fair.
Well, not using basketball makes it very hard for me because I've been kind of
game.
Yeah, well, I've been sort of very specific right from when I was really little. My parents tried hard when I was a little tacker to kind of broaden my horizons and get me to try different things.
Yep.
So I'll reach into kind of those experiences. I played one season of cricket for Camberwell here in Victoria. I don't know which team I was in terms of, but I would have been maybe 9 or 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I my first time bowling, my first ball mid stump out of the ground.
Out of the ground, bowling heat as a kid.
Yeah. So it's literally actually my only cricketing memory. Apart from I can remember sort of maybe just being in the nets at practice and kind of getting a sense of what this different environment was like compared to my, you know, what I just knew and understood well in the basketball space. But apart from that, the only thing I can remember from that one season was taking the mid stump out of the ground and just running around like I was Craig McDermott with my finger out height.
Well, that's good. We'll take that. Let's go back to the sorry to sort of just take a sidebar there. Let's go back to the draft lottery. So the one team that I feel worse for is the Houston Rockets. So they were so awful, and every guy on there that played well was basically playing to try and get more money on their contracts later on. Like, I had no interest in winning games, well, from my point of view anyway. And they end up with the 5th pick. Is that, like, do you think that's worth all the shit that they've done this year, like getting that 5th pick, or do they go again and go absolute, like, be really bad again next season?
Were they the 5th pick, or would I think they were in, weren't they in that top 4 with Portland and San Antonio and maybe Charlotte? I felt like I'm Houston wrong, was
but
still
I just
in there.
The Ringers mock draft, and they've got Spurs, Hornets, Portland, or Rockets 4th, sorry, and the Pistons got the 5th.
Yeah, it was the Pistons that slipped out.
Yeah, that's right.
They had the hard luck story.
That's right. So those two teams, it's pretty rough to be that bad, and then you lost your coach. So to be those bottom teams, like, you just have to go again, right? And be really bad.
Yes and no. I mean, they're both in kind of rebuilding processes right now. And that is just sometimes how the lottery works out. Sometimes you bounce up higher and you win, the basketball gods smile on you in that regard. And sometimes you drop a spot from where your projections were going to be. But also, it's also how the draft works out sometimes. It's not always the first. I mean, it's going to be this time. We all feel very confident about that. But it's not always the teams that pick higher than you that end up with the better players or the franchise players. Moving forward, you know, like, you know, it was Jason Tatum was what was he the 3rd pick? You know, when he was coming through, and here he is having 51 points in a closeout conference semifinal game, and he's a franchise piece that the Celtics kind of built around and play off now. And Nikola Jokic, I mean, what was he? I mean, he wasn't. Yeah, I mean, so it's sometimes it's about where you land. Clearly, in this case, getting the number one pick was the enormous prize.
Yeah.
And it's been that way a number of times over the history of the NBA and LeBron and other examples of that for sure. But sometimes you might find the guy that turns out to be, if you were to redraft years down the track, the guy you might have picked first or second overall, and maybe you found him at pick 4 or 5. So, you know, I think that's kind of the mentality that they need to take to say, hey, listen, like, this is where we are. This is the pick we have. Let's see if we can, through our scouting and our player evaluation and looking at the roster that we have, we can find the right guy and others maybe around us find the wrong guys.
Yeah. I, this morning, sacrificed a baguette for my Dallas Mavericks, hoping that it would sort of summon something from the basketball gods so that we could move up in the draft. There was higher chance of the Mavs moving out of that pick because they had traded to the Knicks, the protection. So they had a higher chance of moving out of that pick than moving up. And I just thought, of course, it's going to happen. We're going to lose our pick to pay for the sins of our past of trading for Kyrie and, I don't know, doing all sorts of bad stuff and from the front office. I'm a pessimistic Mavs fan. I'm not sure if that's coming across or not. What
are
you think?
Happy with Luka being your foundation piece that you're building around moving forward?
I think this year was a real, like, he's been so good, like, from the very beginning, and, like, he's never really had many growing pains, and he's, like, we've been just flushed with, he's flushed with talent, and we've been very lucky, and haven't really had any, like, anything bad go wrong in terms of Luka. And I think this last year was real, like, the thing that the growing pains, and I reckon he's going to come back really strong next year. I just don't think we got the team around him at all. Like, right. I think I don't know. Jalen Brunson would have been a very nice piece next to him, but I've gone on that forever, about that forever on this show. So I'm not going to keep making listeners hear about Jalen Brunson. But
you know, the thing that I always go back to with the Mavs and watching them at the moment is not re-signing Tyson Chandler the year after you won the title.
Mm.
I feel like that you talk about the sins of the past. Like,
oh yeah,
you know, like drafting Luka was the opposite, right? Like you got him at pick three. That's a great result. But I just felt like not going just all in and paying whatever needed to be paid to re-sign Chandler that year and go for, you know, just go for it again while you're in that window with Dirk.
Yes.
I think you're still paying for that.
Absolutely, because Mark Cuban was trying to be really smart and was talking about cap space and it's going to be super valuable, and then it meant absolutely nothing. Like there was so much talk around – like this is the best thing for the team. And I agree. Like, why wouldn't you just go for it? Like if you end up seventh seed, at least you went for it with championship aspirations, not just like throwing it all in, which is why I'm frustrated by them not trying to go for the play-in as well, because we've seen now in the West, the Lakers, right, are up against the Nuggets, which I think the Nuggets will win easily, but still, you just don't know. You don't know how the cards will fall. You don't know which superstar. You like Jokic could get injured, and the team, like the Nuggets, are an easy beat. Like that's, you know. And now we've got the 10th pick, and they're probably going to trade it. So,
you're so sad. You're really bringing my mood down. I got to be honest.
Sorry. What do you do if you get the 10th pick? It's like you did say you can find the gem, right, franchise guys, but the 10th pick in the last like 20 years has been just enough. Like, I don't know if many of them are still in the league. For some reason, the 10th pick is cursed.
We nailed a pick right around that time. When I say we, I'm a big Phoenix Suns.
Yes, we'll get fan. To your Suns. Yeah, so who have you gotten in that sort of area?
Pick 13.
Yep.
What year was it? 2015. Devin Booker.
Yeah. Okay.
So... and that was a case like at the time where it was like, I get, you know, we all get hits and misses in terms of our evaluation and what we, you know, when our team drafts a player, we go, oh no, and he turns out to be terrific. Well, this was a guy at the time I was like, bam, at the 13th pick, that just feels like a home run.
Yep.
Because, you know, he has the chance to be really, really special. And, you know, now he is that, you know, he's an All-NBA type of guy. So,
okay.
Hey, keep the faith.
Yeah, keep the faith. All right, I'll keep the faith. How about you and your sons? So you, I thought when you got Durant, it was over. I thought like the year's done. You guys would win the championship easy. To then get to lose in the second round, like how do you feel? Do you think it's a success? And we won't go down the path of failure as success, like Giannis ways. But I just mean like, do you think, are you happy with the result given the team that you had?
No, really unhappy. Yeah, champion. If you're a championship contender and you don't get to the conference finals, you get bundled out in that kind of realm, then it's really disappointing. And we were definitely championship contenders. That said, had we had Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton on the floor in that game, I don't think we get blown out. Maybe we win that game. Maybe we'd be advanced through that series. It's a big what if for me moving forward, you know, like the fact that those guys weren't out there on the floor. Jokic obviously destroyed us all series, but Ayton, you know, I just feel like it would have made things a different if he was on the floor, if CP had been out there and we had been able to give it our real shake. I mean, what made us a genuine championship contender in all of our eyes and in your eyes when we signed Durant was the fact that we had KD and Book, but we also had those other key pieces, those other star players that
you feel like you gave up a heap for it.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. And as a result, you know, we didn't have the same kind of depth. But what we had was elite talent at the top end.
Yep.
In those four in particular, and two of them weren't on the floor in that elimination game. And as a result, we got blown out, which is why, look, I feel like it's rough on Monty Williams to lose his job in that sort of situation.
Absolutely.
It's a terrific coach. It's a brutal business and a really cutthroat industry. Head coaching positions most of all. And we've been bundled out in capitulations in elimination games of the playoffs the last 2 years. So didn't surprise me, but it also, like, I felt bad for him, and I felt like he was the right guy for us moving forward. But just knowing the industry as I do, like it is a win or go home sort of situation, and that's the reality for him and the Suns now moving forward.
Does DeAndre Ayton stay on the team?
Well, that's going to be really interesting to see.
At one point, you know, you're saying he wasn't on the floor, right? I saw, and I'm just going to go on the one play that he didn't even want to be on the floor when he was on the court. Like, he was standing in the out of bounds and he was watching guys get rebounds. Like, that one player, the poor guy, like, he's had, you know, that one microscope on that, where he's just watching people get rebounds and he's like, what do you want me to do?
Yeah. I mean, he can be a little frustrating at times in that regard.
He's young.
He's
young. He's like, centers don't hit their prime to like 27, 28. You know, exactly. He's got so much growth.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, like, he's very skilled. And, you know, I think he's a key piece for us moving forward. If we can keep him, and I would like to see us like bring the band back together.
Yeah, right.
CP is the interesting one for me because he's not getting any younger, and can he stay healthy through the bump and grind of a deep playoff run is a big question that needs to be answered. Can you find a different elite point guard to operate with this? Do you need an elite point guard or just someone different to run that group when you've got Book and KD? That's an interesting question for me, but I feel like Ayton's in him. An important piece. I was rapt with the fact that we were able to get KD and keep DeAndre Ayton at the time. So I would be keen for the front office to keep him on the roster. I will say, though, when I watch DeAndre Ayton, I'm constantly reminded of the fact that we didn't draft Luka Doncic. And, of course, we have Book, and would that have worked? And, it's, you know, that was the decision at the time. And, obviously, Ayton was playing at Arizona, and the owner at the time was out of the University of Arizona, and you could see why we went that way. But, you know, like, having – like, Luka was coming in as a EuroLeague MVP, like, it was obvious that he was going to be what he is, and we went in a different direction.
I think next year I wouldn't be surprised. I'm just going to, you know, I'm just guessing a lot of the time. A sign and trade, CP3, Kyrie, and we end up with Ayton and CP3, and you guys get Kyrie in some weird way. Like, the Mavs always swing for these superstars that are way past their prime and try to get anything out of them. I think, yeah, I don't know. That's my gut. I don't know if that works in a trade machine or not. But KD and Kyrie playing together, I wouldn't be surprised. And the Mavs just like taking CP3 on some huge contract. So,
okay. I don't tick that off as a Suns fan. I don't give that. I don't give that the tick of approval, but they're not asking me.
let's talk about coaches. So you brought up Monty. So it seems like good coaches are getting the flick, especially this season, right? So we had Monty, Doc Rivers has just been let go, Nick Nurse, Coach Bud, who's 2 years removed from a championship, Silas and Dwayne Casey, they're not the greatest coaches. They're good coaches. They're former Mavs assistant coaches, but they also have lost their jobs. Is this just like coaches lose their jobs every season, but this season seems like it's like good coaches are just getting removed seemingly like quite quickly.
Really good coaches.
Yeah.
Coaches who won titles in some of these cases with that organization not all that long ago.
Yeah, so Nick Nurse won, what was it, 4 years ago now? Bud, yeah, 2 years.
Yeah, Monty, amazing. You know, I mean, it's a great time to have a head coaching vacancy because, you know, the guys that are potentially in the pool there that you could be talking to are really high caliber. You know, the guys that you just talked about there, Monty, of course. So, as I said, man, it's brutal. Like, why would you want to be a head coach? You know, head coaches will always talk about the fact that you're only one losing season away from getting fired in the NBA. It is that cutthroat. Those organizations that have shown a bit more faith and grown with coaches sometimes and often will get rewarded for that. But yeah, to see these guys that have been like a really experienced former coaches of the year or championship winners in recent times lose their jobs has been wild.
What are they going to replace them with? Like, there's not this influx of, like, obviously there's probably going to be like some musical chairs and they probably all end up coaching each other's teams or whatever, there's not like 10 really good coaches out there that you're like, oh, this will be so much better than Bud. Or whatever, who knows the team, who's just won a championship. Doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting. And I guess a lot of it comes down to like the fact that you've got your sort of franchise pieces as players. And if you feel like maybe the message is growing old or getting stale a little bit, and you need a kind of a big change to the basketball side of things, it's usually not going to be with those franchise pieces, right? Yeah. It's not going to be with Giannis. Like, he is the guy there in Milwaukee. And so if you need a change that's really going to shake things up, well, then it's the head coach.
Yeah.
So I think that's what happens a lot of the times here. And that's certainly the case with a couple of these kind of guys. And but as you say, like, really high caliber guys, and the grass is not always greener, and yet they get given the flick so regularly.
That's a nice little segue into chatting some NBL stuff. So Chase Buford, coming off 2 from 2, two championships with the Sydney Kings, and gets fired. Well, I'm sorry, doesn't get fired. He's no longer the coach. So they parted ways. The team didn't pick up his option, I believe. Was that a surprise to you, or is there some reasoning that isn't out yet?
Well, there is some reasoning that is out. Which was interesting to kind of read and listen to yesterday, both from the reporting from guys like Olga Nulich at ESPN and Matt Logue at News Corp, but also from the statement that came out from the club talking about the fact that Chase is exploring his NBA opportunities.
Yeah.
Not stating definitively that he has something that he's going to, but that he's looking to explore those opportunities and see what is potentially out there. And that the Kings got to a point in their deliberations where they needed a commitment. Now, the reporting from Olga Nulich was to say that May 15 was the deadline to decide whether or not they were picking up his option for the upcoming season. And so it seems as though that deadline was set. Chase was saying, look, I still want to look at what this could potentially look like. Can you push that back a little bit? Can you give me more time? And the Kings got to a point where they clearly said, no, it is what it is and it's going to be this way, which really surprises me.
Yeah.
If there is nothing more to it, because if there is nothing more to it, I mean, he is an unbelievably successful coach at the NBL level.
Yeah.
To come in and win at the rate that he's done and to just go bang, bang, back-to-back championships. Like, championships are really hard to win at that kind of elite level. And yeah, they've had talent for sure. They've had talent on those rosters. But, you know, teams have had talented rosters before, like really stacked rosters. I think of Melbourne United squads that Jerry Wright was calling the most talented team since his 07 Bullets. When Daniel Kickett arrived and they had Jordan McRae draft and stash, and, you know, that team didn't make the finals. You know, I think about Sydney Kings teams with Bogut and Randall and, you know, Kevin Lish, and you think, man, that has some serious, that that's three MVPs of the league on the same squad together. And, you know, they made the playoffs, but not the championship series. So to come in and go back to back like that, and for the club to get to a point where they felt like they just couldn't wait any longer, kind of befuddles me a little bit. I do find that element of it quite surprising. So yeah, I'm still trying to wrap my head around that and kind of, you know, see if I can get a little bit more information about how it's all played out. But the bottom line is they are going in separate ways now, and we wait to see what that means for Chase Buford, whether he is going to be on an NBA bench next season. And if that does happen, I'm fascinated to see what kind of situation he lands in. You know, does he land on the front of an NBA bench? And it's a really good situation. It's the type of thing that he would have gone to as a step up from the head coach of the Sydney Kings anyway, or not. Does it result in something of a bit of a sideways move in that regards? I'm really interested to see how that all ends up playing out.
Yeah, especially with the Kings, it seem like they've got most of their team locked down, right? They're not going, we're emptying the cabinet here. We're just going to totally reboot with a whole new team and a new coach. Like, they have most of it sorted already. So you think you'd have the luxury of a bit more time to wait and see if you want the coach. We'll see if he can explore his options. So,
especially when you talk about the local group. I mean, they've basically got their local roster full. The whole bench unit is full.
Yep.
Now they've got to kind of build out what's going to be the rest of their starting group. So imports. Now, it's hard to go out into any market and recruit free agents, whether they're locals or imports, without a head coach.
Yeah.
And without certainty about who that's going to be. That is hard to do, to sit down with a player. And, you know, I've certainly found this over a period of time talking to potential next stars when teams weren't sure who, and I'm going to experience that in this next little while with Sydney, where if you can't talk to who the head coach is going to be and the player can't actually sit down and have a conversation and the agent with that coach, that makes things a bit tricky. So that would be what the Kings are thinking about, saying, well, in the next little while, we're going to need to sign our imports and know who those guys are going to be. So we're going to need to know who is going to be coaching the team.
Yeah, there you go. Let's talk about Next Stars. You just brought that up. So you have much more, well, you are the guy now for the Next Star program, right? What's your sort of title with that?
I'm the GM.
You're like the president. You're the president of the Next Star program.
That's right. Let's roll with that. I'm El Presidente of the Next Stars. No, I'm the GM of Next Stars recruitment.
Yeah.
Which means basically I work hand in hand with the commissioner, Jeremy Lohlegger, on running the Next Stars program.
Yeah. So how does Next Stars work? So, it seems like there's been like some understanding and there's stuff that's quite transparent. Other things you're like, oh, I don't really get the rules around it. So can you give us a real brief sort of idea of how it actually works for teams?
Sure. Well, I mean, I guess what most people who have been following the league for a period of time know is that the Next Stars program is set up to attract NBA draft prospects from around the world to come and play in the NBL for a year potentially, or potentially more, elevate their draft stock, develop their game, have a terrific life experience, and then begin their careers and head off to the NBA draft and grow from there. I mean, that's the program in a nutshell. It's seen some different iterations over a period of time when all of a sudden the draft and stash element of a player recruitment went from becoming an import like James Ennis or Devin Hall or these types of guys, Jordan McRae, to sitting within the Next Stars space. Didi Luzada and Justinian Jessup were examples of that. But predominantly, as the Next Stars program is set up to attract draft eligible players, Josh Giddey, LaMelo Ball, AJ Johnson, Alexander Saar, these guys that are looking at an alternative pathway on their way from playing either high school ball in the American case or maybe some pro ball in Europe, like was experienced with some of the French guys and others that have come here, Ariel Hook-Porty, or coming out of the junior ranks or the NBA Global Academy, the Center of Excellence, like Josh Giddey's experience, on their way to the NBA draft, an alternative pathway to go from here to there. And it's become a proven pathway in that regard and is attractive, real high-level talent.
So how does it work? Are these guys all paid a set salary? Does the team get to decide how much they're paid? Does it come off the salary cap? What about those sorts of things?
The Nexstars' salaries sit outside the salary cap, always has and always will be. So that's a really attractive element of recruiting these guys and working with these players from a team perspective. The salary is not a set amount. It's a negotiated on a case by case basis, and obviously, as has been sort of stated previously, the league is involved in that process in engaging the player, contracting the player, and then from that point, that then takes the decision about which team the next star is the prospect's going to play for. We take the financial element out of that decision.
Right.
So that's a pure basketball decision, which is a really kind of key component of the process. So that the league contracts the player, engages the player. As they go through their period of time in the NBL, their salary is paid by the league, by the NBL accounts department, not by that team. And so then the decision about who they're going to play for, as I say, is a pure basketball decision. With the focus is on the fit, the role, the roster, the city in some instances, the coach, what's going to be a great spot for both the team but also the prospect to make sure it's a win-win situation moving forward.
So the league then sits down with the front office of a team and says, hey, we'd like this, we think this player would be a good fit for you guys, or do the teams express interest? Like, okay, do you say there's a pool of next stars who would like this guy, and then you sort of put your hand up, and is that how it works?
It's a bit of a combination of all of that. One of the things that I'm trying to bring to the program in my role is a constant dialogue with the key decision makers at all of our 10 NBL teams in this space. So I'm in constant communication with with the coaches, the CEOs, the GMs about their roster, what that looks like moving forward, what it looks like right now, what it might potentially look like in the next stars this conversation as well. So I was in, like, let's use Alexander Saar as a case. I was in conversation with
Perth Wildcats, yeah.
Who signed with the Perth Wildcats. Yeah, well, signed with the league and the Perth Wildcats. Been constant communication with Danny as well as all the other key decision makers, as I said, but in constant communication with Danny about, well, what's the team going to look like next season? What's the team going to look like moving forward? In which kind of space would you be interested in a next star? And then as we kind of start to engage with players, I'll then start to sort of speak to these guys about potential next stars, not guys that have signed as next stars, but guys that we're in conversation with who could potentially come into the mix. Is this a guy that you'd be looking to engage with? Get a bit of a sense in that regard. And then from there, there's an expression of interest process. Then when we get to a pointy end in conversations with the player and their agents, their family, and there's a real strong interest in coming to the next stars, we then put out communications to all of the clubs to say, if there is a genuine interest to engage with this player, let us know within a period of time. And then we pick up those conversations from there. And from that point, the player and their team have the opportunity to meet with the key players, key guys at those teams, have Zooms, essentially get presented to, pitched to, as to why they would be a great landing spot. In the end, the decision lies primarily, almost wholly, really, with the player and their group. Something we want them to make sure. We want the team to make sure that they're in the game pitching for a player that they really want.
Yep.
And we want the player to land somewhere that they feel really confident and comfortable with, because we feel like that's the best opportunity to get a great result all round. So that's what happened with Alexander Saar. He was really impressed with what Danny and John really presented. Felt like it was a really good fit. The role was exactly what he was looking for. The organization, the city, the fan base. And felt comfortable diving in and signing on with the Wildcats.
That's cool. So one last one on this. So you get to, you essentially get to play God a bit, right? Like, you don't get to pick, like, you get to match up a player right with the team. So you do a lot of, like, the moving around. That's a pretty cool job. Like, it's a pretty cool role that you have within the league.
It's been really fun. I'm enjoying it. Like, it's my first sort of step into player personnel.
Yeah.
So obviously there's a lot of the role that's evaluating talent, watching a lot of hoops that I wasn't previously watching, right? Watching a lot of kind of European leagues, younger leagues, like, you know, like these guys that are, for instance, coming through the French program, Rayan Rupert, Ousmane Dieng. These guys have come through a place in France called INSEP, sort of like our Center of Excellence, our AIS. Right. They play in the third division of pro ball in France. I've watched a lot of that over the past 6 months. Overtime Elite, a lot of G League, a lot of high school stuff, and a lot of the kind of the junior stuff here in Australia as well. So I've been watching a lot of that, evaluating the talent, building my network of networks within, you know, player agents, NBA scouts, NBA front offices, to be in conversation with, and then also building my relationships with those key decision makers and key guys, coaches and GMs around the league as well, which were already pretty strong, but, you know, have become stronger throughout this process. As now I'm not trying to, like, work with them and in the media space, but more so trying to
harass them for info
for info or quotes or interviews. And now I'm trying to serve as a guy who can help them get a player that's going to help their team, help their club, help the league overall.
Yeah, that's cool. Sounds like you'll be a GM at some point. Maybe head over the Mavericks and do something there. Sorry, I just keep thinking about the Mavs. Sort of poor front office. Anyways, let's I've got some questions from people that have put in our Instagram, backchat_basketball. Before we do that, just one team, your way too early prediction for next season, championship.
For the NBL?
For the NBL, yeah.
I tell you, I've been really impressed with what Melbourne have put together.
Melbourne it is.
Melbourne United, I mean, okay. Joe Lawalachul's back. They've got Luke Travers, Ariel Hook-Porty's back, Dally's back. Shai Ely's a kind of a key guy. Of course, we wait to see how healthy he's going to be. Chris Golding's still on that roster.
Yep.
All of that, we haven't even, that's not even talking about a single import at this point. I feel like Tanner Krebs was a really savvy pickup in free agency as well. So they are stacked. They're loaded. And last time they loaded up a bit like this, for me, was that season, that 2021 season that they won the title with Jock Landale as the grand final MVP.
Yep.
And they had Scotty Hobson as their import coming off the bench. And I feel like they're loading up in a kind of a similar style like that.
All right, Melbourne, there you go. All right, this is from James.Cockman. What is your commentary career highlight? We'll go with that one. There's a few questions there, but that's a good one.
That is a cool question. I think calling the NBL championship series is my highlight. Yeah. I've done that, I think, the last 5 years in a row now. But to be involved in those games at that really pointy end of proceedings, it's a real honor. It's a privilege. It's a huge responsibility that I don't take lightly, because, you know, I think it's an amazing league. I love being a part of it. I've loved it my whole life, the NBL. And so to be involved in calling those games, the games that are going to actually decide who hoists the championship trophy when all is said and done, they're my highlight, being involved in those.
That's cool. From Chelsea_S, did Bronny James consider playing in the NBL Next Star program?
We were in the conversation. We were in the mix.
That's cool.
I'm not going to speak for Bronny specifically, but I can say that we're in the mix. We made sure that we were a part of that decision-making process and that, you know, we presented ourselves as a real viable offer, option. It was, you know, and we came correct as well. Like, there was no messing about. It was obviously going to be, you know, a really competitive landscape, the recruiting landscape for Bronny. You would have seen some valuations about him in terms of name, image, and likeness. Yeah. Moving into next season, and he had some great options at the collegiate level, of course, landed at USC, but you know, others like Oregon and Ohio State that were well discussed publicly, but we made sure that we were in that mix and we presented ourselves as an alternative pathway, and in the end, unfortunately, it went a different direction.
Almost like a blessing. Like, it would have been amazing for Bronny to come to the NBL, but then you're the guy that's, I'm sure there's more decision makers, not just you, like, going, okay, you're going to go play for that team. But like, Bronny would have ended up on one NBL team, and whether he'll be, I think he'll be a very good player, but you guarantee a team, like, they'll sell out of jerseys, they'll pack stadiums. Like, that's a huge piece to give an NBL franchise, right? And you probably would have been one of the key decision makers in that happening.
Well, again, as I said before, it's the athlete who decides at the end of the day. You right. know, like, I didn't decide that Alexander Sarr was going to go to the Wildcats. Alexander and his team ended up deciding.
Right,
that.
Right.
I didn't decide that AJ Johnson was going to go to the Hawks. He and his group eventually decided that it was going to be with Illawarra. But you know,
I guess every part of team would have put their hand up for Bronny James, so it would have been completely up to him to pick.
Exactly.
Yeah, there you go. One last one before I let you go, from Nick Tan 77. Should the NBL be increasing the number of games per season as more teams are added?
As more teams are added, I mean, yeah, I think we need to have that conversation. You know, I think with 10 teams right now, the 28-game season, I think, is a sweet spot.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't see the necessity to kind of increase that number at this point. One of the, and this is, comes as no surprise to everyone, it's old news, but one of the really great selling points for the NBL internationally and recruiting imports and next stars and the like is the fact that it's a reasonably short season. It's short, sharp. It starts in the start of October, but it finishes in March, maybe early April. And if you're a high-level player, you can potentially pick up another short-term contract elsewhere. And we've seen guys doing that left and right this year. You know, Mitch Creek and Gary Brown, those guys playing over in Puerto Rico, but then Milton Doyle and Brady Manick. And look, there's guys all over Europe right now. Some guys have jumped over to Japan. Sam Froling's just returned from his experience over there. That's a real positive. And then from a next stars perspective, the draft prospects, the ability to finish the season early, get over to the States, start their draft preparation, get their individual workouts in, get their body right so that they hit the team workouts, the combine, those types of things in peak nick is a real positive. I mean, it's something that separates us from the European situation where those guys need to grind it out. I mean, those leagues are looking to start their playoffs here in the next little while in late May. And we're heading real close to the draft. We're heading real close. I mean, the combine's happening right now this week. And some of those guys, like, you know, obviously Wemby, but also a guy like Bilal Coulibaly, they're not there right now involved in that process, having those interviews with teams and the like. So, and then the other part, of course, is where our league sits within the Australian sporting landscape. When you factor in the winter competitions of footy and rugby that are real Goliaths, of course, from a TV and a commercial perspective in this landscape as well. The fact that we sit where we do because of the number of games and what we have right now, I think works. But you're right, as the league grows in number of teams, it's certainly a conversation that will need to take place to assess whether or not it will help the league eventually to increase the number of games.
Very good, Liam. Thank you so much for giving up your time today on the Backchat Basketball Show. One last quick one from me. Are you a footy fan, AFL, when I say footy?
I am.
Which team?
Well, I'm an Essendon Bombers fan. So my mum grew up right around the corner from Windy Hill.
Great.
My dad, you know, the Santa Maria household, the Italian blood flowing throughout, were all Carlton supporters.
Of course.
So when I was a little tacker, One, I was the youngest of three boys. One went for Carlton, one went for Essendon. And essentially, when I came along, I was up for grabs.
Yep.
So in my baby photos, some are with Carlton stuff on, some are with Essendon. And, of course, my mum won out and I became a Bomber. And when I was really tiny, back-to-back premierships in 84 and 85, the Baby Bombers in 93, the heartbreak of 99, and then the dominance of 2000. But I tell you, it's been a tough trot ever since.
Yeah. That's okay. It'll come around again. Wow. It always does. Unless you're St Kilda or something. All right, thanks again, mate. I would like to chat to you again soon. Maybe when the season comes a bit closer, we can talk about the NBL a bit more. But appreciate giving out some time. And if you're listening now, we'll have Reese Vague, I think, next week. We've recorded that, so that'll be on the Backchat Basketball Show. You can email us hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. Send us a message on Instagram @backchat_basketball. Liam, thanks again.
Thanks heaps for having me.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.